By the time I found her, she was dead. I groped for somewhere to sit down. The only place other than the bed where the body lay was a wooden dining room chair half buried under a pile of wrinkled clothes. It had a cushion hanging off the seat, patterned with cartoon bees. And as I moved to straighten it, a cockroach, startled by the movement, hurried up the chair leg. I jerked my hand back and closed my eyes. Then I opened them again, helplessly. I didn't want to look at the body. The body. Robin. Rachel. I'd never seen her as an adult. But as a teenager, she'd been round-faced, milk-fed. Now she was so thin as to be impossible to look at. My vision unfocused itself when it encountered her ribs, visible through both the fabric of her Run-In Rebels t-shirt and the sheet in which most of her body below the shoulders was tangled. Her hip bones, too, projected, cradling the vacant, starved abdomen. A little vomit had dried in the corner of her mouth and on her tongue, the color of burned things. She had been unconscious when she'd choked on it. Iker was panicking. "Should I call the police?" he said, directing his gaze at the close yellow walls, the popcorn ceiling. "I'm really sorry about this. I'm so sorry. I'll call the police. I'll call." He wore a white polo with the logo of the housing company on it. Crescent-shaped sweat stains gathered underneath his sagging pectoral muscles like a pair of closed eyes. They twitched as he began digging in the pockets of his khaki pants for his cell phone. "No," I said, trying to think fast. "No, I'll call." "You go outside. I swallowed. "I just want to be with her for a minute." "Yeah," Iker said, wiping his upper lip. Okay. "I'll wait. Outside. He pointed. "I'll be right down there if you need me." He went down the stairs into the living room below, taking his proprietor's key but leaving the door ajar. After a minute, I could hear him shuffling on the front porch, audible through the mosquito screen on the open window. She was still on the bed. The fact of her was as sweltering as the room. In my imagination, I reached for my phone. In another version, I didn't. I lived these two visions simultaneously for several long minutes, my hand twitching in the air above my purse, unable to choose between them. If I called the police, then Robin would be dead. Absolutely dead. Legally, governmentally dead. I would have to identify her and arrange somehow to take her body back to Albuquerque to be buried and have a funeral. And then everyone would know she was dead and it would be over. I could contest, maybe. But contesting could take a year or more. I couldn't wait a year. If I didn't call the police, then she would still be dead, but... I took her wallet off the dresser and looked at her ID. Rachel Vreeland stared out at me from the hypersaturated photograph. She'd been pretty as an adult. The pale skin I remembered from childhood turned slightly orange by the sun or the DMV's printer. 5'9", the text next to her face said. Eyes brown. Her real name wasn't anywhere in the wallet or anywhere in the rest of the room. She had a lot of stuff, but most of it was clothes, strewn across the floor and piled in the closet. I picked through the items with pockets, careful of cockroaches, but turned up only old movie tickets and gas station receipts. The walls were covered in movie posters and a corkboard with photographs of friends with red Solo cups, a scruffy orange cat, a long-lost boyfriend, from whenever the last time was she was weighty enough to crush to his side while he held the camera out in front of them. The dresser drawers held dozens of bottles of disintegrating nail polish and depleted pans of eyeshadow. At least 50 pairs of underwear, which I pushed aside with a clothes hanger, scraping the bottom of the drawer. Nothing underneath.